You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it's Meera Sivasuthi and welcome to the show. Having toured to over 70 countries and performing with the greatest musical minds he can find, saxophonist and composer Yuri Honing, together with his acoustic quartet, are now set to dazzle Malaysians with a spanking live gig at No Black Tie. Known for blending jazz with many other genres of music, I find out more about Yuri's musical experiments and his illustrious career thus far. And of course, joining me as well is the drummer, whose name is Joost Leimba. Welcome to the show, both of you. And, you know, both of you hail from the Netherlands, of Dutch origin. How did you start off in music? I'm going to start with Yuri. I mean, you're a big name as far as the jazz scene is concerned in the world.
Well, I came from a musical family. My father and mother played piano. My oldest brother played piano. And actually, I did play piano. And that was classical music. And during a holiday in Switzerland, we heard music and we drove down the mountain with our windows opened up, and we ended up in Montreux, like in the mid-70s, something like that. And we walked up the casino where this festival was held, and I saw Dexter Gordon and Stan Getz and Woody Shaw and all these great people having a lot of fun on the terrace. And it kind of triggered me. I thought, well, you know, it seems that these people are doing what they want for all their lives. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should take care of that too.
Any regrets?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in every profession you have some ups and downs, but in general, I really enjoy it.
When did you realize that you'd make a career out of music?
I think when I was 19, because that was the first time I got a very serious teacher for saxophone. And I managed to play one bar on very high level. And if you can do one bar, you can do 24 bars, 48 bars, a whole set, two sets, or a week.
Yeah.
I knew that. I just needed the one bar, and I got it when I was 19.
Right. And you know, and when did you transition from the piano to the saxophone?
I think I was 13, around that time. My father gave me a recording of a piano player, Vladimir Ashkenazy. Mm-hmm. And to stimulate me to study more piano, and I put it on, and I just thought, well, I won't make this, so why bother continuing my studies? Mm-hmm. So I quit piano.
Right, and you know, coincidentally, you found your calling in playing the saxophone.
Well, it has to do with some kind of resistance towards my family, because the repertoire was very well known, and we had like a piano on every floor. So if you would
my
start,
goodness,
yeah.
How did they take you bringing a saxophone into the house?
Well, you know, I thought up until then, if you would study new repertoire, my father would scream from the ground floor, well, that's a B flat, not a B. Or my mother would say that, or my brother would say that, because everybody knew all the repertoire. So I thought, let's take in a saxophone, because nobody knows about saxophone, about the repertoire
that
of saxophone.
That is very clever indeed.
Let's try to be independent.
And not have so much pressure. That's why I played squash and not tennis in my family.
Ah,
because
right.
Everyone else played tennis and it was just too much pressure.
Yeah.
So I understand where you're coming from. How did you become a drummer?
Actually, my father was also a drummer. And when I was 7 years old, my mother was really pushing a bit that I should learn to play an instrument. And then I was thinking, we had a lot of jazz recordings at home, and I was always listening to the drums. So it attracted me already as a kid. And I thought, well, if I choose the drums, I probably don't have to read sheet music, which is easier, mm-hmm. and I can just play what I feel. So the first lesson was on the music school, and my teacher, he was not a drummer, but a classical percussion player in a big orchestra. So the first lesson was only snare drum, and he learned me the sheet music.
Right.
And so that was a bit a disappointment. And I stayed with him for 10 years, I think, mm-hmm. until my 16, 17. And yeah, I never had the feeling that I had a choice. So when you are on high school, you have to think what kind of profession and study you want to do.
Yep.
And basically, I was not interested in anything except music. And at that time, I practiced really a lot, every day, the whole day. So I thought, well, what can you do if you only are doing this? Well, that's obviously the conservatory. So I did that when I was 18 and finished it when I was 21.
In your drums?
In drums,
In
yeah.
drums?
Yeah.
Okay. I've always felt drummers' hands and feet have a life of their own. Would you agree with me? And do you think everyone can become a drummer? I mean, just watching it is... I feel myself, you know, getting all tangled up just watching, you know, how you keep to the rhythm with your hands and your feet.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and I'm still practicing it a lot. Yeah, the coordination part, which is that hands and feet can do independent things in the same tempo. That's a hard thing, and you have to practice that very slowly, really slowly, that you really feel in your mind, okay, this is coming together and this is not. And yeah, it takes a lifetime to do that. I mean, still, if I'm reading interviews with very famous drummers, they all say the same. Mm-hmm. But I think every instrument has its difficulties, and it's your own choice how far you go into this.
Yeah. Yuri, do you think you'll ever be able to play the drums? Or do you?
Well, I actually don't want to, because I leave that up to Joost. I think you should stick to one discipline, stick with your guns. And
How did the both of you meet and, you know, collaborate? I mean, you are part of the Yuri Haunig Acoustic Quartet, which is performing at No Black Tie.
Well, actually, we've been playing together for like 25, 28 years. We met during our studies at the conservatory, and halfway we had a cup of coffee and decided that that it was a better option not to become a sideman, but to see if we could conquer the world. And we made a plan. And in fact, we did conquer the world.
How old were you at that stage?
I think in our mid-20s, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. That's very forward-thinking for 20-year-olds.
But we met earlier. Eh? We met when we were 18. Mm-hmm. So that was a year before the conservatory. I was walking in the street in the evening in the place where we lived, Hilversum. There was a bar, and I heard music, jazz music, and I heard a saxophone. So I went inside, and Yuri was playing there. He was still playing alto. And the drummer there was a guy who I knew from the music school I was studying. So Yuri and me talked a bit, and Yuri said, well, maybe you want to sit in the second set. So I just waited until the moment they started, and I left immediately the building, because I thought I'm not so good that I can play already, you know, with this band. So, but then we both start to meet more and study and practice, and then the school came.
And that's how you took off after that.
Yeah.
And who are the other two who make up the band?
Well, the bass player is actually right now Gulli Gudmundsson. Who just came into the band since February. He's from Reykjavik, Iceland, and I knew him for quite some time now, and I had to let the other bass player go after a few years because of logistic trouble. He lived in New York, and Wolfert is somebody that I know for many years and was on my list of favorite piano players in Holland, so he was my first choice. After 10 years playing without any piano, I think the last one piano player I played with was Paul Bley in 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find any decent piano players until Wolfert came up. And he's a great player, so I'm very happy he's in the band.
You obviously may do without a pianist, but what is the pianist's contribution to a band like yours?
I think he can give depth and accessibility to the music. So it's kind of it works both ways. He can, in a way, he translates some of the stuff that I'm playing towards a general sound that is more accessible than without the piano. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, he adds another dimension. So it's more easy to produce music like a sculpture, like something that you can walk through or walk around.
Right. And Yuri, your music has been described as being very open-minded, gutsy, adventurous, you know. How would you describe your music?
Well, as the world as you see it when you look out of the window. That's, you know, the world is gutsy and actually quite broad-minded. There are no borders. And I think music should represent who you are and how you see the world.
And Joost, how do you keep pace with Yuri? And you know, Yuri, you compose as well. How do you keep pace with the music that he comes up with, or do you guys do it together?
We exchange a lot of music. We do that in the planes too. We have our laptops, and we just, you know, we have these sticks, and we change out a lot of music and just talk about, well, did you hear this, did you hear that. It's not just jazz and classical music, but there's a lot of pop music that is going through our hands, and some of these bands you don't really like, but they have a particular element that you like. For instance, like the drum sound, or you know, the general production, or there's a good groove or whatever. And we just try to exchange that as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. How would you say? Would you say that you have achieved what you have, Yuri, in all this time, and you've done it pretty much on your own? Or would you attribute a lot of the success to your band as well?
I think there's nothing you can achieve alone. You need... I always believed in teamwork from the very beginning. So I actually didn't work like a jazz musician, but more like a pop musician in that sense. So I have a group of musicians that I feel really committed to, and they really feel committed to me. And I think if you just use musicians to make your music sound, you don't use all of their talents. So you need to stay open. And in that sense, Miles Davis was a big example to me how to manage and treat big talent in your band. You should give them room because it improves the music in the end.
That's not the easiest thing to do, though. I mean,
no.
As such a renowned musician, sometimes you tend to be the control freak. Is he really, Jost? I mean, I shouldn't be asking you this.
No, not at all.
Don't be too honest.
Say the right thing.
Yeah. No, it's with rehearsals, most of Yuri's ideas are pretty open and not always that fixed. You know, I also play with other bands and people, and sometimes you work with people and they really have everything fixed in the composition, even the drums and how everything has to sound. I mean, you can do that in also a way, but I like it more when you can discover together what actually is the secret behind the composition, and then you both or the whole band are learning new things, and then you come into a new area. That's actually what we did with the album True. Yuri had a couple of compositions. We rehearsed a bit, but the idea was not fixed yet when we were in the studio. And in the studio, we actually tried a lot of different things, and we felt the mood. It's recorded in Berlin, and it everything was really influencing us in the music. Mm-hmm. And that's how the album came out.
Right. We will play a song from that album, True. It's titled Paper Bag, after the interview. But when we come back, we're finding out a little bit more about tenor saxophonist Yuri Hörning, together with drummer Jost Leiber. They're performing at No Black Tie. They performed yesterday, actually. We'll find out how that performance went. And of course, they are also performing tonight at No Black Tie. We'll get more updates up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture, and it's Mira Sivasovi. Yuri Hörning, who is a tenor saxophonist, is also a composer, together with drummer Jost Leiber, all from the Netherlands, down to perform here in Malaysia. It's not their first collaboration here in KL. It's the third time you're actually performing here in KL, am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
How's that been for you in the last two visits?
Really nice. It was actually the first time I was in this country. It was 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, as a tourist. I traveled the whole country up to Kotobaru and the Taman Negara, and I actually wrote some music based on those experiences. And it was very nice to come back to this city. I like it.
Mm-hmm. 20 years ago is a long time ago.
That's a long
time
ago.
How has Malaysia changed for you?
Well, I wasn't that experienced in those days, traveling-wise, and I know that my first return to this city, how strangely that might sound, Kuala Lumpur was so much smaller. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was my first real international trip. But nowadays, of course, we travel
all over
South America and Asia and everywhere, basically. So if you visited cities like Sao Paulo, Shanghai, or Mexico City, it changes your ideas of size.
Mm-hmm. As well as the music. I mean, has it influenced your music?
Of course. Everything influences your music. It all adds up. So whether it's what you see or what you do or what happens in your life, I always try to put everything in it that is passing by.
Mm-hmm. Jost, what about yourself? This is also your third visit here in KL.
Yeah, well, the first time was 2007, and second 2011, and now again. So, yeah, I mean, the city, it not really changed a lot, I think, but I'm when we are here, I'm only here for a couple of days.
Yeah, but what keeps you coming back?
Yeah, well, I'm very much interested always in traveling and meeting new people and playing your music in different countries. Mm-hmm. It opens my mind and it gives freedom to yourself and to your music. And yeah, I like the people very much here. Mm-hmm. People are very friendly, and we have good contact with Evelyn and with the Penang Jazz Festival where we performed.
Yeah. How does the performing in Sao Paulo and Shanghai, for an example, how does that compare to KL when you perform here?
Yeah, every country has its specialities, and I think if you say Brazil in general, people are very open, very emotional, like that. And in Asia in general, people are a bit more shy, mm-hmm. in a way. But also that depends a bit, you know. In Korea, people are more open than in Japan or China, for instance. And in Malaysia, people are also pretty open, I think. And it's easy to make contact.
Yuri, I've always wondered, I mean, you're a big name in Europe, you know. Why Asia? What's brought you to Asia?
Well, interest to start with. There's a lot of interest in music in Asia in general. There are a lot of festivals that are organized. And we like the food a lot.
Oh, really?
Yes, of course.
What does the Dutchman like?
Well,
everything what is not Dutch.
Dutch. Well, you were here a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you know, the Dutch are known for their traveling interests. And I'm from Amsterdam. And you can find any kitchen you can think of in Amsterdam for a long time now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Dutch are used to eat world kitchen.
I'm sure you do. Any ancestors who were in Malaysia during the time the Dutch were actually ruling here?
No. And actually, that's the one spot I wasn't visiting when I was here 20 years ago as a tourist. Mm-hmm. It's down south, right?
Malacca.
Yeah, Malacca. Yeah.
All right. So you should go there then.
Yeah.
You never know what
check
you might
my history.
One piece which took on Yuri with the saxophone is Radiohead's Paranoid Android. And yeah, I've got a clip here. I want to ask you what really spurred on this song, but we'll just have a quick listen before that. What spurred you, you know, to take on that song?
Well, it came up in a discussion with, this is a recording with the Dutch Metropole Orchestra with Vince Mendoza, conductor and arranger, who did the arrangement on the Radiohead song. I proposed this song because I really like a lot of the stuff that they did and still do, melodically, harmonically, in any possible sense. I proposed it to another arranger who refused because he didn't get it. And Vince immediately said yes, because he knew that, you know, this is good music. Mm-hmm. And well, in my personal opinion, there tends to be more development right now in pop music than there is in jazz music. So I'm searching mostly in the pop area now too. I've always been interested in covering pop music in a way that jazz music used to do in the 30s. You know, jazz music came out, used to be pop music. And these guys on Broadway in New York in the 30s and 40s varied on the songs from the Broadway shows. That's basically where our music came from, the American Songbook, mm-hmm. which was the pop music of that day. So what I do is nothing less than just traditional jazz tradition, in the way that I always try to find one or two tunes out of the pop repertoire and do reworks on them.
Right.
And I think also my career is for a large part based on doing that. You know, I released Star Treks in 1996, which was a record filled with pop songs from my own youth. Because I thought, well, I can play the 30s American Songbook, but that's like from the generation of my father and grandfather.
Yeah.
So I record Blondie, ABBA, The Police, stuff like that. And that really made a stir in Europe. So that was my first step on the international scene.
Right. And, I mean, we have an entirely different pop scene now. I'm not going to comment on it. But has that got influence on the sort of music that you make today?
There are always bands in the borders of the scene that are interesting. You just have to, you really have to avoid mainstream. Usually mainstream is pretty much crap, actually. So you, in festivals, but also in how people program, you have to look at the borders. And there are always little bands in New York and in London and everywhere that produce really, really good music.
What about yourself, Jost? Do you find you also seem to be inclined towards, you know, pop music and jazz? Did that come quite naturally to you?
I was actually a jazz player, and as a kid I already listened to lots of jazz. When I was on the conservatory, I was actually a jazz snob, you can say. So I listened only to jazz, and all the music which was pop music or whatever, I thought, well, it's stupid and it's way too easy, and listen to the drums. And actually later on in the 90s, on the moment that we had the idea for Star Treks, and I was really start to listening to older pop music, and I got really into it and also understood how difficult it is to play. So then it became a big challenge for me to do it, and it still is. So I can say for now, for the last 7 years or maybe longer, I don't study so much jazz anymore, and I study mostly pop or world music. Yep. Things I like, and I try to influence my jazz playing with that or so, and it has a good influence. Yep. On it.
It must be quite difficult, actually, just letting go of that, you know, stereotype thinking along the lines of jazz, and then wanting to incorporate, you know.
Well, that's what my hero Andy Warhol explained, calling it "kill your darlings." So you know, you put all these years into achieving a certain ability, and then the next step you have to do is throw out these
to
abilities
to get rid of them. But to maintain the roots of it, but to let go of quite a lot of it as well.
Well, if you studied, I mean, we both studied jazz music for such a long time, then it's overall in your body. So even if you think, okay, I'm not going to listen to it for, let's say, a couple of years, it doesn't matter so much, because it's still everywhere there. And then you listen to other music, and it will not make you a worse jazz player, I think.
Yeah. You have 18 albums under your belt.
Yeah.
And that is a lot. How long have you been in the scene?
Since 1994.
Okay, that's about 18 years.
Yeah.
Almost coming up to 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. I'm heading for my pension.
Do you ever think you would leave the scene?
No, well, when I'm dead, yes, I will.
Yeah, exactly. So not for, you know, in the near future.
No.
And I'm going to come to your album that you recorded. It's called True, and it was recorded in a day. It offers a striking originals with a couple of interpretation of pop numbers. Now, how do you come up with an album in one day?
Well, you know, there's a lot of thinking at forehand, and preparing at forehand, and that's a mental thing. You don't have to rehearse. It's like a kitchen. There's a kitchen in my head. You know, you have all these pans and soups and stuff, and you're just walking, and then at some point, everything is almost ready. That's the point where you hit the studio. You could do this process also in the studio, but, you know, I came from a tradition where most of the albums that I made out of the 18 were recorded in a day or an afternoon,
right.
Actually.
Wow.
The only exception is the orchestra that we just heard that took like 5 days.
All right.
Because then you have 150 people working, and that's a more complicated process.
Is that a lot of pressure on your part as the drummer? Yours?
It doesn't feel like pressure. It's most of the time I have the idea when we are in the studio, it something good will come out of it. And it's a process. You're searching, and I feel always better going in the studio like this than when you go into a studio with a total fixed program and fixed sheet music, and then you have to do it. That gives a lot of more pressure because you don't have any freedom anymore, and you have to. It's like almost making a classical album. Mm-hmm. You really have to play everything, every note which was written already there. If it's a searching process, it's and everything feels good in the studio and the whole atmosphere is good. It's not a pressure, I think.
Right, and you were awarded Holland's most prestigious jazz prize, the Boy Edgar Prize 2012. I mean, what did that feel like?
Well, that was that was, of course, a very nice experience. It's like the moment when you become salon fee.
But does it make a difference at all to you?
No, of course not. It doesn't influence my music. It was just a very good occasion for me to thank everybody that helped me out during my career, because you can't do that alone. Mm-hmm. And I was very happy that most of my friends could be there and that I was in the ability to thank them and share the stage with them. And I think that was the most important thing of the event for me.
Yeah, and yours to be associated with such a name, how does that feel like? I mean, you've known each other for such a long time. I mean, isn't there this sense of done? He gets the, you know, awards, and he gets just about everything, all the recognition under the sun. And I've been here by his side, you know, as the drummer.
Well, it's for me, it's more like it's almost a marriage. You know, we are together so long and working together so long. And for me as a drummer, I was never so interested in having my own band. I mean, I had my own band in the mid-90s. Yuri was actually also in this band. And but that was not because I wanted to have my own band, but more I was interested in digging into a certain kind of music, which was not the trio on that moment. And yeah, I don't have really problems with that. I see it as something we are doing together.
Together, okay. Before we come into you telling me a little bit more about Paperback, which is the song part of the True album, I've always wanted to ask a saxophonist this, Yuri. Does playing the saxophone really bring about all the women at the same time?
Of course.
I feel a sense of jealousy here. The drummer said, of course.
Well, the problem with the drummer is I always have to take off the drums and do everything. So when I'm finished with that, everybody left the building.
Well, you know, there's a saying in the music scene that points out that whatever happens on tour stays on tour.
Okay, you're not answering my question, are you? Not in the most direct manner. He's blushing. It goes without saying, Yuri. Don't worry about it. So you want to tell me a little bit more about Paperback? I'm going to play the whole song for our audience. How would you describe Paperback?
Well, it's from an album from Goldfrapp, which is an electronic duo in the end of the 90s. A singer and a keyboard guitar player. And they made this one album, Felt Mountain, that I thought was so incredibly well written, typical British, like in the song tradition, the best tradition possible. And I could actually use all the songs there that are on that album, but I thought Paperback was the most attractive. So for me, you know, using contemporary pop music is a way to keep my music, in the sense of jazz music, connected with today, to make it more contemporary in a way. And it's also a bridge to a broader audience because they know this music. So I can draw them into mine.
Into your world.
Yeah.
So you can catch the Yuri Hauning Acoustic Quartet performing tonight, the 9th of October, at No Black Tie, located at 17 Jalan Masui off Jalan Nagasari, Kuala Lumpur. The show starts at 9:30 p.m. Cover charge is 50 ringgit. You can call 03-2142-3737 or just visit noblacktie.com.my for more details. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Drummer Jost Leiber, together with tenor saxophonist Yuri Hauning. And here's their song Paperback from the album titled True on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.